I can't change the environments I'm going to be in. So I have to be completely comfortable, or as comfortable as I can be, being in these situations and non-judgmental about what anyone else does.
Have you ever been face down in the toilet at 4 a.m, spewing up your guts, thinking to yourself, I can't do this again?
Or maybe you've waited 55 minutes in the rain outside a pub to meet a dealer, just to find out he ain't coming.
Broken bones, empty wallets, and lost friends. With big nights come big regrets.
And hey, we're not here to judge. We've had some absolute howlers in the sesh ourselves, but now we're trying to draw the line. I'm Jamie.
And I'm Tom.
And we're two old friends who, after over 30, that's harrowing, Tom, combined years in the music industry, have decided that change is upon us.
It's been hard, but it's very possible. And that's why we started this podcast, to be your support for a life free from the naughty stuff.
Join us each episode as we interview celebrities, musicians and influencers about cutting down on substances from their lives. Hear about how they did it, their motivations and how they're coping.
We aren't here to preach. No judgment, no rights or wrongs, no censoring. This is just an honest account of people changing their relationship with alcohol.
Welcome to They Think It's All Sober.
They think it's all over. It is now.
Hello, Thomas.
Mr. Osman, how are we?
I'm poorly.
I know you are.
I'm trying to hold through, but like my ears are blocked. I've got the sniffles. My throat's gone.
Just in time for the 1st of May then.
Exactly, mate. 6 days' time. Leicester Square Theatre, our debut live show.
But hi, it's Jamie here.
Welcome to They Think. If you go sober, you'll get really fit and healthy. No, do you know what? It's last year when I ran the marathon, I got so sick afterwards.
Really?
And then this year, I went to watch the marathon and like support some friends, including Leanne, smashed it.
Yep.
And got sick.
Oh, mate.
So,
marathon.
Not for me.
Yeah. Mate, do you know what I think it is? It's actually probably just this horrendous, horrendous weather that just will not give us any sunshine.
I know. And it's the juxtaposition, because on Thursday, I think what happened was on Thursday, I went to watch West Ham and it was like beautiful sun. So I was just wearing like a t-shirt and a light jacket. And then as I left the stadium, it was like freezing cold and pissing it down. So I got back on the train like, and I knew it was going to happen. And then like Ted and Elle were both sick and I was like, this is coming for me. But it's fine. It's good. How are you? How was Zach's double disco party thing?
Double header. Yeah, he had his home disco on Friday.
Nice.
Which he invited whoever he wanted from school. And yeah, we had to organise that.
Nice. What were you dressed as? A turtle?
No, the Hulk.
Oh, that, good. Got that one wrong.
Close. and then... Yeah, Sunday he had his ninja party, which is a sort of like trampoline-esque type place where they had like climbing walls and foam pits, and yeah, had about 15 of his mates there, which was great. So yeah,
his 8th birthday?
6th.
Sixth. Why did I think? Why am I just aging your child,
mate? If he was 8, that would really terrify me. No, just 6.
Oh, amazing.
So, yeah, no, it's good. It's good. But, yeah, time is flying, my liege.
Time is flying. Time is flying because, yeah, in 6 days, we will be at Leicester Square Theatre performing for all you beautiful people. I think we have about 40 tickets left.
That's right. So,
this is the last desperate plug.
Yeah, the last plug. The last time we'll be able to plug the live show is right now. So,
yeah.
Go online, book your tickets.
Yeah, sell it out. And also, like, I think we mentioned last week, but we've done a partnership with Clean Co. So you're going to have 0% signature brew beer there. You're going to have 0% Clean Co. We're going to have new t-shirts. We're going to have new hoodies. We're going to have some mugs. And we're also going to pop on the podcast this week a place for anyone that's coming on their own or maybe wants to kind of meet up with some other people before. A couple of pubs in the area where you can get Lucky Saint on draft. So you can go have a couple of pints like you would pre-game, pre-sesh.
Yep.
And come on down to the show.
That's right. So yeah, looking forward to it.
I'm buzzing, man. I'm good. We've done so many rehearsals. Now we did a 2-hour rehearsal today. An hour and a half of it was figuring out why Keynote would not play fucking audio through my television.
Mate, I'd say that to anyone who asks what it's like to be a music producer. And I say it's 80% basically being IT support to yourself.
Yeah.
And it's no different putting a presentation together.
Do you know what really pissed me off about that today?
What?
I just like control alt deleted it and it was fine.
Oh, no.
It's like all these updates, everything. It was like, oh, just reset it.
Mate, classic restart for the win.
Yeah, no. But I'm really excited for the live show. I think, I don't know, it's come around really quick. If you think about in December, we were announcing it and coming up with the idea. And then all of a sudden, and even in January, when I was like first talking about writing the script, and now here we are, end of April.
That's right.
It's fucking harrowing. Where's time going?
I know. But hey, I'm looking forward to it. I hope you are too. This week on the pod.
Yes.
We are delving slightly into music territory.
Well, we've never really done it.
No.
Like, we've spoken a lot about our experiences in music, but I think maybe we just like held off getting any kind of, we've had artists on, but anyone in the music industry, we kind of haven't. So we're, for those of you that are listening, we're doing a talk at Great Escape, which is a big music festival and conference in Brighton on May the 18th. And we've got an amazing guest who's doing that with us, which is Izzy B. Phillips from the band called Black Honey, who I've known for many a moon, and she's just celebrated a year sober. And we're going to be doing a talk about the music industry and what more can be done to support artists and people within it, within sobriety. So we thought, what a better time to do our episode with an absolute music industry legend, which we recorded a while ago. I think we'd been waiting for the right time to like frame it, hadn't we?
That's right. That's right. And it feels like now is a good a time as ever.
Yes.
To do so. So yeah, I think we should get into it.
I'll let you do the introductions, my friend.
So this week we have dance music industry legend.
Yes.
And you know, this guy's made a big impact culturally across dance music and has discovered a lot of talent and had a lot of successful records under his guidance and mentorship. So yeah, I'd love to give a very, very warm welcome to Mr. Andy Daniel. Woo, 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 woo. So welcome to the pod, Mr. Andy Daniel.
I'm starting with clapping now. I've decided.
Yeah, good.
I'll do that as well.
There you go.
It's a nice way to kick things off. Thank you very much for joining us this Tuesday morning.
Thank you for having me.
You are the first guest that we've had on from the music industry.
I feel very guilt tripped into this, by the way. Because you were kind of like behind the scenes in helping me out when I was like, became super curious and really, really helped me kind of like, because you were like a few months ahead of me or probably longer. And so I was like, I knew that and was like, okay, this guy kind of knows what this is and maybe will help. And now you fucking get me on a podcast have to talk about it.
There we go. But no, I mean, I think from certainly from mine and Jamie's perspective, we've had a lot of guests on from all walks of life. And even though we're both in the industry, we've kind of just haven't explored it yet and thought it was a good time to do so, you know, with someone like yourself who's come and been like entrenched in sort of the dance community, which, you know, traditionally has gone hand in hand with drink, drugs, partying, raves, and you're now doing it from a sober perspective, and thought it would be great to kind of, you know, just share your experiences, the good and the bad, you know, the trials and tribulations that it's probably, you know, come with as well. Because let's face it, it's not easy being at a rave sober at 3 a.m. always.
Do you know what? I've had to relearn how to do it.
Yeah.
So like I've 20 years of doing it in a different way. Now I'm kind of like starting again, but honestly, it's better, weirdly. It's taken a minute to kind of figure out because like when kind of going through this process, it was like, I'm either going to have to change job or I've got to figure out how to be in these environments. And I'm like, well, I don't know how to do anything else. So I'm kind of stuck here. And also I do love it. So it's like, okay, I'm going to have to be in clubs because that can't change. I'm going to have to be around people doing whatever they want because that's their business. It's none of mine. This is purely about me. So it took a minute to kind of be like, okay, I've got to figure out purely personally how to kind of do this in this way.
Sure.
So yeah, that took a minute, but like I really remember one night in Ibiza this year, because I was like, that's obviously kind of like, I went to Ushuaia, DC10 and High all in the same night.
Wow.
Which was brilliant.
Yeah.
So I was like, I went and saw Getter at Ushuaia, who we work with, amazing. Then went and saw an artist I'm working with at DC10, amazing, but I found that actually quite hard.
Yeah.
Very, very, not because of drink or drugs or anything like that, just it was physically fucking intense. Yeah. Like, it was so busy. But then I went to High to see Prids, and like, I just love Prids. Like, it's just, and I went and listened to the music. And I was like, I haven't done this for years. Yeah. I wasn't thinking about which toilet to go to or who's holding something in their pocket, or I was actually like, oh, I'm just here to enjoy myself and listen and actually really appreciate the music. And I was like, fuck,
that's
been
great.
Messing up for years because I'm missing the best bit.
That's something I found so beautiful about sobriety was like, considering that music is all of our jobs and we listen to it day in, day out, I'd say there's probably a good 10-year period where, although I loved music, I maybe didn't appreciate music anywhere near the level that I should do. So for me, sobriety was that whole thing. I think I spoke about it on my episode of like falling in love with music all over again.
That night felt like that, which was great. And it was so kind of like, oh, it was a bit of a light bulb because it's like, I was doing it for a lot of reasons, but that was like, oh, great, I get this as well?
Yeah, yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
It was like a real, like, I hadn't really expected it, but absolutely loved that, like, for once, I was actually focused on the bit that I got in this for, not all the other stuff that kind of crept in over a period of time.
That's amazing. And, you know, like you said, Jamie, that's kind of one of those moments where you fall back in love with it and go, yeah, this is why I was doing this in the first place. And
totally.
you do forget. But I guess we'll get stuck into the kind of music side of stuff later. And I think, you know, as always, I think it'd be good for you to step inside Jamie's time machine so we can step back.
Do you know what? On the last few episodes of last season, I wasn't happy with my time machine.
Well, have
like,
you been
it
practicing?
Upset me. Well, I haven't, but I feel like I'm going to give it a good go today.
Is this for sound effect? Because I'm like, yeah, I need to have that, please.
Boo-you.
That was good.
Thanks.
I thought that was good.
And we are now back.
7 out of 10.
So
fucking A&Rs, man. I'm just going to try and get a Boo remix in a bit.
I have some notes.
Just needs to be bigger.
Can you pump it up a bit?
Yeah. Can you make the snare loud?
Fuck you guys.
Sorry.
So, I think it's good for, like, you know, I guess in the context of what we're talking about in music, but I think it's good for everyone to understand probably your relationship with alcohol growing up. You know, was it a fairly normal relationship? You know, what are your sort of first memories of alcohol growing up?
Do you know what? I was listening to like a couple of the other podcasts on the way in, I hadn't really thought about this actually.
Mm.
And like, it drinks less my issue. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a gateway to things that I'm less comfortable with. But like growing up, it was kind of okay. Like, you know, I'd have like a little tiny glass of red wine for Sunday dinner when I was younger, like sipping my dad's beer, that kind of vibe. But then I do remember like when I was kind of 16, yeah, I was like every kid that discovered alcohol.
Sure.
Fucking went for it.
Yeah.
You know, and definitely started remembering a few nights of like throwing up on the tables and clubs and, you know, underage clubs and all that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. And definitely remembered a New Year's Eve where I got blackout drunk. And like the last thing I remember is drinking like a bottle of whiskey and then waking up on my living room floor with my mum staring daggers at me because she was worried I was going to swallow my tongue.
Jesus Christ.
Or something. And I totally forgotten about it. Yeah, yeah. And I've drunk whiskey once since that day.
Mate, do you know what? I've had similar experiences with whiskey and I can attribute every bad decision I've ever made, like really, really bad decision, back to whiskey. Just like, what is it with that shit?
I think thankfully that experience actually kind of stopped alcohol being a thing. You know, it was always about, but it was never like that. I think that's the only time I've ever been blackout.
Yeah.
You know, so like alcohol wasn't really a issue, I'd say.
Okay.
Which I'm grateful for, by the way.
Yeah, no, of course. And I think everyone, you know, going back to that, I think everyone always has, when they're growing up, there's like one sort of cursed spirit they might have.
It was Archer's and Jack Daniel's were my two. I managed to kind of mess up both of them.
It's like a juxtaposition there, like nice Archer's, I mean? Friendly, and then Jack Daniel's of sin and depravity.
I think mine was Southern Comfort. I had I was young, I had a night on that put me off it forever.
With lemonade?
And no, well, I think it was straight at the time. It was when I was like, well, you know, just teenage drinking. But yeah, it was that experience where I was like,
I can't touch this. It's fine.
It's fine.
No, it's not. I remember running into a garden, falling over and just staring at the stars. That's the last thing I remember.
And then waking up.
And your mum's like, on a tarpaulin.
Oh, my God.
What's she done? Thought you were going to die. Like Dexter wrapped the living room.
I mean, the way she was looking at me, she could have helped. Like, she was fuming.
Right, wrap him up. Get him in the boot.
Yeah, pretty much. Don't come through. I'm going to kill him again.
So where did your... I guess timeline wise, when did you really start getting, because I guess like you must have been having a passion for music when you were like late teens, and when did that kind of start looking like it might be a career option? And
like, I started out kind of wanting to be a DJ. Like, I got a pair of decks when I was really, like when I was like 15 or something like that. I was just like playing music in my bedroom, like lots of people. And then like started working at a record shop. I was like repairing DJ equipment at a place near my school, just kind of like immersed myself in it. Like, and then that kind of turned into like opportunity into opportunity, met, like started, yeah, working in a club, started playing at a local club, then met Simon, who works at Defected. It was like, do you want to do work experience? And just little amazing things kind of became little things. And then, you know, that kind of turned into a career somehow.
Nice. So when you, well, it's amazing. Like, it started from that. And how did alcohol play a part when you were DJing? Was it a prominent thing when you were like playing out, or were you more interested in that time of like, you know, just
it was a bit
music?
Like for quite a long time, and I'm quite grateful about this. Like, I definitely felt like I had a certain point where I'd drink and it would be great. And then I'd actually just start feeling sick. And then I'd stop. I hate feeling nauseous. Mm. I hate hangovers. And that kept me in check for the longest time. Because it was just like, oh, no, don't like this. That's me done. You know, definitely like I toured quite a lot when I was young. Definitely had a few horrible airport experiences when you're like pretty much going straight through and just be like, ugh. But it was never, thankfully, it was never that bad. You know, it was just kind of, I would say, relatively normal.
Nice. That's cool. I mean, when, let's talk like moving through career-wise, we always talk about it being like the good, bad and the ugly of alcohol and then leading to other stuff. So you spoke about it quite candidly in your episode that for you, it was then alcohol leading on to coke and other stuff, which happened. I mean, what age were you when that was?
Like 23, 24. So I feel I wasn't like one of these young kids, a bit like you, that was like chaotic and mad. I genuinely just loved music and was grateful for it. But then it was like, I don't know, I never thought cocaine would be a thing in my life ever. And then it just, there was just one night where you try it with mates and then you're like, fuck, something just switched. And unfortunately for me, that was then a 10-year cycle.
I had a very kind of, I think, quite an unusual experience. I actually got exposed to it very, very young.
Right.
Like, I think I first probably tried it like 17.
Right.
Which was not a situation I'm going to go into or anything like that, but I got exposed to it very young. And the person I was working at a record shop at the time was like the most anti-drug person ever. And was like, he was looking after me when I was in clubs in a really, really positive way. And was like, see, where's people like chatting each other's ears off? Don't be like them.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I'd been exposed to it. I had this really, really great voice basically going. And then for 10 years, didn't touch it. And then it kind of came back into my life probably around like in my 30s.
Right.
Or sorry, late 20s, like early 30s.
Interesting.
And it just kind of crept back in. But for a long, there was a massive gap of like kind of initial exposure going, that ain't for me. And then it kind of finding its way back in.
Interesting. Was there a parallel between like the better you were doing in your career and the more exposure you had? Was there like a...
I think you've talked about this before. It's like, I see that drug as a silent assassin.
Yeah.
It really fucking is. It's like, you know, a lot of why I probably started kind of using it in a bit more depth was I have to be out late. I'm tired. I've done a full day's work and I've got to go to a club. And also I need to, like, I don't like doing things like this. So, you know, I work quite hard to stay behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And I'm not the most sociable person. It's like, but you know, in this job, you have to be incredibly sociable. And that's really, really important. And I do enjoy it, but it's like sometimes takes a little help.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like, it became this thing. Okay, it wakes me up and it makes me feel like I can chat to someone I've maybe never met before. And you've got to sell yourself, sell what you're selling. It's like, it kind of helped at that moment in time. But then it creeps up on you, as you say.
Sure. So what perhaps started as like almost like a bit of a social crutch.
Yeah.
Then, like you say, the silent assassin. And then I think it kind of becomes more prominent, right?
Yeah. I think it, as time went on, it was like, you know, what started as like, you can have one and you're done. Suddenly it's two, it's three. It's, you know, it becomes, you need a bit more each time. Like over quite a long period, it like this kind of snuck up on me. I mean, it was a pandemic where I think everything changed for me.
Right.
Like that was... I lost my off switch. Before, I think I had an off switch.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what changed. but something changed.
Yeah.
And I was like, ugh, don't like this.
Yeah. Pandemic for me was an interesting one with Coke, because I would say I probably had an unhealthy relationship with it pre-pandemic regardless. And I was aware of that. But it was then my best mate moved in during lockdown. And we were just like, we started having a lot of fun. The first couple of months, like, this is fun. DJing, I bought smoke machine lasers.
You know, like Zooms with people.
Yeah, it was
like...
fucking wicked. But I remember, and the minute I probably should have clocked it was, I remember when Boris made that announcement on the Sunday night. And I remember ringing my dealer and being like, can I just grab three? Thinking, oh, if I'm going to be stuck in for 3 or 4 weeks, someone might move in and I might need it. Now that was that. At that point, I should have clocked at that point. Yeah. Like, that's not fucking... Because I was completely stone cold sober when I made that decision. And that was the first time I'd like fully gone into that zone.
I think you have these little moments where you kind of notice things, but you're like, huh, why have I just made that decision?
Yeah.
Like that? You know, like you do it, but you're like, why did I do that? Like, that wasn't... That's dumb. And like, I just kind of felt that creeping up a little bit.
That's almost like you're stocking up on provisions. It's like, I need 12 litres of water and like a load of pasta, load of toilet roll.
I was doomsday prepping.
A quarter.
Everyone's on Amazon trying to buy sanitizer. Fucking pasta.
You've got my nose sanitizer.
Yeah, mate? Now I look back at it, I'm like, that was fun. And then, yeah, for me, then it just spiraled in the pandemic. Was like, and I was never like curtain twitching. I'd still get up at 7 a.m. I'd still work. I'd go for a run. I'd be completely functional. But then, like, we just do this thing called Wild Wednesdays where we'd just get absolutely fucking off our nut on Wednesday for no reason. But then Wednesday would be Thursday would be Friday, Friday. And suddenly I'd do 4 days in the bounce.
I think it was like escapism a bit, because you're just like stuck in this environment. I don't know if it was like trying to take back a little bit of control or just remove yourself mentally from that situation for a short period or whatever. But like, I just kind of found myself after a while, like, the couple of hours fun that you maybe get when you do it, the knock-on effect.
Yeah.
I was like really feeling that and noticing that, like, those couple of hours on whatever night it was, 4 days before I kind of feel normal again. I'm just like, hang on, this ratio is so out of whack.
Yeah.
Like, that is not worth that.
No, of course. What I wanted to kind of talk about a little bit as well is that relationship, because we've talked about it before, that being in music, your goal is probably as much as ours is, you have to, you know, manage artists to have a successful career and ultimately have success. I'm doing the same from like a production writing viewpoint, trying to make hit records. As are you, as an A&R, trying to, you know, sign stuff. And, you know, you've had a lot of success in your career. You know, you've had some amazing records out, like Cola, you know, Camel Fat, Storm Queen. It was you as well, wasn't it? Yeah,
like, a few people.
And like, yeah,
I'm
think,
not taking credit for the people. I'm always good about that.
But, you know, and I think from my perspective, certainly I've struggled with when you have success, the party element has been rife, and, you know, it's been hand in hand with a bottle of champagne and booze and drugs and everything has been around. Do you experience like an element of that when you've been having, you know, hit records and you've been out with...
It's just, I think it's just everywhere, full stop. Yeah. It's like you sign a deal, you pop a bottle, it works, you pop a bottle, it doesn't work, you commiserate. Like, it's just there. You know, but I think that's across all of society, not as, you know, it's not just completely siloed to the music industry, but it's probably maybe a little bit more, maybe more accepted in the music industry. But as I say, like, I don't really want to comment on the wider world, because this is a really personal thing. Like, I'm not here to judge what anyone else does. If it's right for you, it's right for you. But I found that the situation wasn't right for me. So I wanted to make a change.
Yeah. No, I think that's, you know, and it's commendable. It's really commendable that you took that upon yourself to do it. And what, you know, I certainly found there hasn't been a lot of people in this industry, personally found, that have gone and made that decision and gone sober.
Do you know what it was that really helped kind of go, okay, do you know what, this is it, actually? I've kind of been feeling a little bit uncomfortable with some of the things I've been doing for a little while, and just being like I say, that cycle of kind of a few hours of fun, letting off some steam, knocking on and just feeling a bit off kilter, like for quite a long time. And like, you know, that would knock on into like home life and, you know, whatever. So it was like, I don't know if I love this anyway. And then I did Dry Jan last year and felt fucking amazing for it. And then I went to like LA and Feb and tore my ass out of it for 5 days, which was fun.
Yeah.
But I felt so shit And then, like, so it was just like, it was really black and white, the two different feelings. And then kind of came back and was like, just kind of back in the same old habits of like a wonky Tuesday for no fucking reason.
Yeah.
And then was just like, this ain't it.
Yeah.
This just ain't it. Like, I like how that felt. I don't know how this feels. None of it's worth it. Like, I think about like that, that Ricky Gervais thing of like the guy doing the luge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, mate, just doing the luge, like staring at the fucking ceiling at 4 a.m.
We talk about
on
that
a
all
Wednesday.
The time. Like, it was the worst. And like, you'd come back and be laying in bed. And that's for me when like the coke really played in, because it just would bring up, you know, some nights you go to bed and you're sober and you can't sleep and you might think about some stuff. We spoke about it last night, like waking up and feeling a bit anxious, like that happens. But when you're there and you're coked up and you're doing the luge, it would just bring up like the most random shit that I did not need to think about, that I probably had dealt with in some way, shape or form. And you're just there like, everything is fucking terrible.
Yeah, like, I realised the second I left the venue or whatever, or wherever I've been kind of hanging out, the second I walked out the door, I wanted it all out of my system. Mm. I was like, I just wanted it gone. I wanted all of that to kind of go. And I was like, well, you can't, that doesn't work like that. Stop putting it in.
I guess you'd say then, like from what you're saying, that your relationship with alcohol and drugs in particular was very functional to begin with. It was very much like doing this for a cause.
Yeah, it was weirdly, at that time, it felt an easier route to it did a purpose. It wasn't really about like getting off my nut. It was like for another reason almost. And then it kind of sneaks up on you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it does get you. I mean, I've been fortunate in my, I suppose, career that coke for me was never a big thing.
Mm.
And I just think in general, I realized very early on that it affected me too badly to do regularly. Like, it would be on occasion, but then I couldn't stand those moments where you're lying there 6-7 in the morning, your heart's coming out of your chest. You're having all the deepest, darkest thoughts. And I genuinely, pretty much every time I used to do it, that moment where I'd be there like 6-7 in the morning, like on my own, I was always convinced I wasn't going to wake up.
Mm.
And I think when you're going to bed convinced that you're going to die and you're not going to wake up,
probably not for you.
That's probably not a good thing to do. So I clocked that quite early, and I was thankful that I recognized that it was just not good for my head. And luckily I didn't have that association. I think that association, the hardest thing for me actually was cigarettes and alcohol.
Yeah.
Because I like desperately wanted to stop smoking for a long time. But as soon as I used to have a beer, it was probably the same as maybe what you were, like with coke, where you start thinking about
how fucked up is that?
No, like, I'm the same. That's why I won't drink now. It's not, alcohol's less the issue. But if I have a beer, if I have two beers, that is game on.
Yeah.
Like, and I know that that's what I'll be like. So that's the price.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, I can go and have a lovely non-alcoholic beer, get the same experience, but I'm not opening that door, which is why like I'm kind of where I am. You know?
For sure. Everyone always says, like, we've talked about this before, everyone always says the weed is like the gateway drug, and that's bollocks. It's alcohol.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And I appreciate it. I'm very, very lucky that my relationship with alcohol allows that.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that's not necessarily the same for everyone. Yeah. So I actually count myself incredibly lucky that the lesser of my things is the thing I can get rid of quite easier than the other thing.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting with coke. I feel like now, there was a period of time, probably I'd say maybe I felt anywhere between like 2016, 17 and like when lockdown just opened up, 2021, 22, where coke just suddenly was like so mainstream. And I don't know whether it's now I feel less because I'm just not around it at all anymore. But like, you'd walk in pubs on a Wednesday afternoon and you'd actively see people doing it. Or it would be like, people would be talking about it, like WhatsApp groups would be chatting about it. Pretty much my entire friendship circle was like wrapped up in it. And not in a way that maybe anyone thought was unhealthy, because it might be like, oh, a Friday and Saturday night, everyone will pick up a bag and sit around the kitchen table. But I felt like there was a part of society outside of music as well, where suddenly it just felt all consuming.
Yeah, it's quite wild. The number of people I know that you know, use it casually, and like, as I say, no judgment, nothing like that. Yeah. That's, but it's, you know, that was a part of when I kind of made changes. Was like, it's not going to go away, and I don't really want to lose a lot of my friends. So like, a big thing that I did right at the start was I told loads of my closest friends what I'm trying to do, and was like, look, I'm going to try and do this, and I really, you know, I'm not. You can do whatever you want, and you can do whatever you want around me as well. But if like try and be the angel on my shoulder, not the devil.
Yeah.
And also like be kind of try and hold me accountable.
Yeah.
You know, you're not responsible for me, but at the same time, don't try and be like, oh, go on, don't you? You know?
Yeah.
It's like, you can't be that. Because if you're going to be that, I won't see you anymore.
Yeah, you need good people around you that can support you, just in the same way that you have no judgment. Totally. You know, it's the other, it needs to reciprocate, right?
But the good thing was, I can't tell you one person that didn't respond to that positively.
Yeah.
And that was like, it was a really positive thing to kind of verbalize it and then feel accountable to it as well.
Yeah.
And also a lot of friends were like, do you know what, I kind of want to do that as well. Sure. So it kind of opened up a bit of a conversation that I hadn't necessarily seen before, which felt good.
Yeah, we spoke about that last night actually, because I kind of, it's a really lame term, but I said to Tom the idea of this like friendspiration, right? Where a couple of people might challenge their relationship with drugs and alcohol. That's what made me question it. It was one of my clients and my cousin going sober, and then I was like, oh, actually maybe I can give this a go. And then you'd gone sober and I bumped into you and you were a few months ahead. That was inspiring. So I went on the journey, and even before the podcast I'd been talking about it publicly, and like you were saying, people then reach out. And I do feel it's one of those things that like the more people talk about it, the more normalized it becomes, the more people question themselves. And like you say, I've got no issue with anyone doing anything, but what I would love in life is for every single one of my friends and human beings to go to bed at night and think, oh, fuck, I really like myself and I'm in a good place. And I think it's drugs and alcohol that push that in a bad direction. So I think if we can all just like have these conversations openly, it might take people a bit longer to get there, but it's nice that like you can inspire people.
No, and that's why you managed to guilt trip me into doing this.
I love the
because
guilt trip.
There's a greater, you know, there's a greater good about it, you know, and that, like, I think that could be exciting. I love that there's this explosion in non-alcoholic drinking, you know, that's been a huge help for me, because like I've found it hard to be like, okay, I can go to a pub environment, but I almost just want to just have a non-alcoholic drink in my hand, almost just to stop people talking about it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be like, oh, you're not drinking, you know, like, oh, those conversations are quite exhausting.
Yeah.
Like trying to justify it almost. It's like you just have something in there. It's like, you know, zero or whatever. It just kind of looks the same and no one talks to you about it.
No, it's great. I'd like to talk about some of the benefits that you've found on different aspects of life since going sober. So how's family life been? Like home life, dad life? How have you found it?
I hated being like, I've not slept. Like, oh, I've been doing the luge for like a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And then like my kids coming in at like 7 a.m, like I've not slept a wink. I'm still a bit praying. And it's like, come on, dad, let's go. And I'm like, you know, trying to like force yourself into like, okay, put a smile on my face, neck an espresso, see how I go.
Yeah.
You know, but also just like, I get quite cranky. You know, I didn't love that person. It's like, you know, I'm meant to be, you know, a dad. I'm meant to be like, you know, a good presence around my kid. And like, and I just didn't feel like I was. So like being accountable to him and kind of removing that and being like, I want to go play football at 7 a.m. on a Sunday. Yeah, let's go. Brilliant. Yeah. You know, it's great. And like that's a really like positive change that I've felt around that side of things. And just being like having more patience, and you know, you're not knackered. You're not like, your brain chemistry is normal.
Yeah.
You're not like depleted with serotonin, kind of like scrambling to feel all white, and you're not on a massive fucking come down.
Yeah. Because I kind of get the feeling that I had this, and I'm sure I get the impression that you're the same, is that I always thought, I mean, I kind of changed my relationship with drink when Zach was very little to not drinking at the weekend, because I felt that he shouldn't have to not have my time because I'd been on a fucking wild one. But I would always commit to doing stuff. And if I had gone out on a Saturday night, I would still make sure I went, even if I felt like shit. And I remember after like a Halloween party, I had to go to like Portons Park. And I remember I was on some fucking dragon ride going backwards. Whoa. Was that next to me? I'd slept for about 4 or 5 hours, but I was so hungover. I remember getting off the ride, throwing up in a bin. I'm like, looked at myself. I was like, Tom, you're fucking like 33 years old. You're a Peppa Pig world and you're throwing up in a bin after being on a dragon ride.
Like, Daddy Pig's judging like, you hard right now.
Yeah. I was like, sort your shit out, bro. And so that for me, but that is, it's about how you feel, isn't it? Not like the, because as far as like he was concerned, I was still there. He didn't probably really know that I wasn't feeling 100%, but you're now.
You're accountable, you know, it's like, I didn't feel like I was being my best self.
Yeah.
And like, and I didn't like that. And so, you know, if I've got to make a choice between one or the other, I'm choosing that all day long.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like there's lots of like micro things that kind of led to this moment. You know?
Nice.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Like, what was the moment that you decided to stop, and what were the first steps you took to go on that journey?
I think I'd had that framing I kind of mentioned of that amazing January, kind of feeling like crap again in Feb, and just really having that real black and white kind of, this was great, that's that. And then like just had a random night for no reason. And like, and just a rubbish night.
Yeah.
And it was just like, nah, I'm done. That's me. Like, yeah. That's it. And then kind of like, I've been gearing up for it, I think, for a while. And then that was just like the little micro straw that kind of broke the back. And was like, right, nah, I'm done. And I think I'd around that time, like I reached out to you a little bit. And, you know, thankfully, like because of, you know, putting it out there a little bit, I knew there was a couple of people around. So it's like, I'm kind of thinking about doing this. Have you got any advice? And like, and then I was listening to like, I read like Fat Tony's book, yeah. Listened to his podcast.
Nice.
Other podcasts were available, sorry. no, but this hadn't started at the time. And was just listening to like trying to find experiences of people, you know, whose lives maybe felt in some way adjacent to mine, yeah. Not comparing them, but, you know, parallels maybe. And was just kind of like searching for a different, you know, yeah. Or searching for, you know, I guess inspiration or kind of like how you do it.
Sure. Because I remember I think you reached out to me because I think one of the, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it might have been IMS.
It was IMS, yeah.
Yeah, which I think may have mentally...
Well, it was, I think like, it was the first big test.
The first big test. It's yeah. Like being back in Ibiza, being on the island,
yeah.
Sober. How did you find it?
It was. I felt like for certain things like that, Glastonbury, some of the Ibiza stuff, and I've got one coming up, like things where I know it's going to be like, okay, this is a... going to be a challenging situation, but I still need to do it. It's important, but I felt it was really important to kind of like get my head in the right place and kind mm-hmm. of I analyze stuff quite a lot, so like I need to think about things in advance. I can't just kind of go with the flow.
Yeah.
I kind of need to know if this situation happens what I feel like I'm going to want to do about it, and then when it happens I can kind of deal with it. And also like I kind of said, accountability. I felt accountable to you, which is quite powerful to me.
Mm-hmm.
So because I talked about it and it wasn't just like this thing inside my head that I'm only accountable to myself, and then in 2 seconds you might go, oh, fuck that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I felt responsible to other people. So it was tricky. I was very, very worried there wouldn't be non-alcoholic beer.
Yeah.
That was like my biggest fear, weirdly. So I was like, I kind of need that thing in my hand.
Yeah.
Like, again, not like... for multiple reasons, like it's the familiar thing, it makes it feel okay and no one's going to kind of ask you about it. And then they did, that was fine. But then the man thing, what, within 2 hours of getting there, someone had offered me a bump. I was just like, oh, come on.
Fuck, yeah. Come on, I've been here 2 hours.
And then I was like, no, I'm good, man. Thank you. That's very kind of you, but no, I'm good. And then like, after that, I was like, okay, great. That's what I've done that. That's fine.
Yeah.
You know, that was quite, I mean, I was like, I'm getting up at 8 a.m. I'm going for a fucking 10K run. Like, you know,
kind starting
of
the day off,
put all my kind of like little, you know, I don't know what the word is.
It's almost like processes, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of processes in place, I guess, to be like, okay, this is how I'm going to do it. And like, I'm going to need to go for that run tomorrow morning, so I can't do anything tonight.
Yeah.
Because that's important. That's more important to me.
Yeah.
You know, but if I didn't have that, then I don't have the thing to aim for, you know.
And I suppose when you're doing it as well, and you probably think back to previous years, you know, getting up at 8 a.m. to do a run as opposed to being up at 8 a.m. doing the luge.
Yeah, totally. I was putting in breakfast meetings. I'm like, I'm going to this thing. I remember previous years where like day one, go and tear the arse out of it till 5 a.m. I can literally remember the year before where like just, you know, I'd had a lovely time. And then the next day, I just wanted to die for the whole day. And I've got back-to-back meetings all day. I was like, oh, horrible. And like trying to string together conversations where my brain's just mush.
Yeah.
But this year I was just like, no, I'm going to make this the most productive one I've ever done. I'm going to stack my diary with great meetings. I'm going to put breakfast in. Let's fucking go. You know, so just I had to get my mindset right first. But it's like, I'm doing it. I'm doing this because I want this out of it. I'm not doing it to kind of have fun.
Yeah, of course. And the non-alcoholic beers there, the pretty good.
Yeah, it's fine. I think I can't remember what it was.
I think it
was
like, might be Alhambra. Is
something
that?
Like, I can't remember what it was.
It was brown. Had a brown bottle.
It did the job.
Wasn't it the Estrella?
I think it was Estrella through.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
Estrella Zero or something.
Yeah, yeah, it's good.
But they seem pretty well stocked across the board in Ibiza. I think I've done it like 6 or 7 times now, and it's been pretty good. I can't say I've ever struggled to, to get a zero, which is
great. I think I'm okay with it now. It's just at the start, it felt more fragile.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, that was like my little crutch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Let's talk about club culture, because that's something that I think all of us are immersed in. And obviously there's a stark difference in doing it when you're fucked up and doing it sober. What have been the main differences you found, both from like a work perspective and, I know we touched on it briefly at the beginning, but like a fan perspective, and any advice you might give to any listeners that, you know, are thinking of wanting to still go raving sober?
I mean, like kind of touched on before, it was just that total reconnection with music. Like that was, it suddenly it was all about, I'm going there to actually enjoy the music, not to kind of go chase the night or whatever, which was great. I mean, it's just little things like, you know, if I've still got to go to a 3 a.m. show, I just need to remember like to bring food with me or something like that. You know, but I'd drive to most things now, because again, like that's just another level of accountability. You know, it's like, it's convenient, but also it means I can't do anything even if I wanted to.
Yeah.
So it's just, I just kind of build in like all these little fail safes as well. And then, yeah, like snacks. And don't be like, you know, if you've got access to a green room, if you're lucky enough, make yourself an espresso. It's perfect.
Yeah.
I make coffee in green rooms now.
No, but we've been talking about this a lot, like, and something I've been speaking really actively with promoters about is like, it doesn't hurt them to put 15, 20 zeros on a rider. 100%. Make sure there's more water in there, because I think we've all been really guilty of this in the entire music industry culture of like, artists on their way up aren't getting paid enough. They're not getting paid properly, you know, when they're doing their first gigs. So often the currency they're getting paid in is a bottle of vodka, a bottle of champagne, a bottle of whiskey, whatever it is in the dressing room.
Yeah, well, look after your mates, come on. Yeah,
you know what it's like. You land in like any country in the world with a DJ and the first thing the promoter says is, do you want anything?
Yeah.
And we all know what that means. Yeah. So it's like, I think it's just trying to slowly retrain people that like, look, like this is always going to happen in dance music. It goes hand in hand. Most of the kids that are 18, 19 going to raves are taking their first pills, MDMA, whatever. And that can be a beautiful experience for people. But on the side of the people that are working, like having a little bit more accountability.
I think you're right. Like having a non-judgmental alternative presented equally, there's no harm in that at all. And I think it could be a really, really positive thing. It's like, you know, if you want to do the other, you do you. If you don't, here's your option.
Yeah.
I had a show on a couple of weeks ago that I will remain nameless for both promoter and rep, but the client had a load of zeros in the rider, a specific brand, and the promoter rang me, or the rep rang me the day before the show, and he was like, I've got to buy a bunch of Ponzi shit on Amazon because I can't buy it anywhere. And I obviously didn't say that I didn't drink either, because I really couldn't be fucked with the argument. But then when I got to the dressing room, he was like, I've got all that shit. And I was like, yeah, actually that's for me as well, because I don't drink. And his face was like, ugh. And I was like, fuck. Like, we sit and have these conversations all the time with people where we're like, yeah, everyone's cool with this now. And actually I was like, back in club world, like completely juxtaposed with someone who was kind of like belittling me for my choice, but he didn't know he was belittling me.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, fuck, now we've still got a bit of a way to go here.
Yeah, it's a journey, eh? Mm. You know, but I think it's taking huge positive steps, but it's not completed, that's for sure. But you know, it definitely feels 100, you know, the fact that this is like an open conversation, I think, so hugely positive thing. The fact that the non-alcoholic kind of beverage market is booming is really encouraging. You know, I definitely see a bit of a generational shift between my generation and, you know, younger people coming up. Their relationship with alcohol feels very, very different in a positive way. So it's like, you know, I think there's lots of good signs, but we can always do more to kind of help encourage and stimulate that. And it's just, you know, as I say, non-judgmental, it's about choice.
Yeah.
But present that choice. Don't just present one option only. I mean, that's the negative thing.
Yeah. Just going back to what you were saying about prepping for club nights, because we have quite a few people asking about like sober raves and like saying they're going to events and stuff. I think actually the snack thing is great. Like, because actually if you're not fueling your body on like fucking, you know, substances.
I didn't notice it. Like, it was the maddest thing. Like, when I first kind of did a couple of late nights, I was like, why am I so hungry? It's like, well, funny enough, for however many years I've been kind of doing this, didn't really have much of an appetite at 3 a.m.
Weird,
I don't know why.
And the doorman's not going to be like, sorry, mate, can't come in with that Star Mix.
It was like, not far. I'll just be leaving stuff in the car, because like, when I come out, I'm going to be starving, or I'm going to go McDonald's drive-through and put some other shit in my body.
Thank fuck for the 24-hour drive-through. That's honestly what I found since I've been driving back from clubs, man.
But even just getting a late night coffee is actually quite
yeah,
weirdly quite useful. Caffeine's like the one thing that I'm still over.
Well, I think, I think
it's all got left. Allow it.
No, we're the same. You were saying you didn't really drink coffee until you stopped drinking.
Yeah. Never drank coffee.
I really enjoy my coffees in the morning, especially when I drive in. It's just, I'm holding this now.
I might say you've been like wanking that coffee cup off for the last entire interview.
It's a comfort.
Also, let's talk about the benefits, like in terms of career, because you've had a really successful year, right? Which coincides with your sobriety.
Yeah, I mean, like, I just, time. I know you've talked about this a bunch. It's an extra day in a week. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it. Because like it would be just, you know, another kind of stimulus for you know, I said it was loads of like micro things that got me to this point. Another bit was like my job is so busy, I can't afford to waste time. And I kind of identified this spiral of like I could have one night where I just even have one beer and just feel like 5% groggy the next day. Then I feel like I fall 10% behind on my work. So I'm always trying to chase and catch that up. And then I fall further and further behind, it felt like, until I just kind of spiral into like an escape moment. Yeah. And I feel really shit. And now I'm 20% behind.
Yeah.
And then like over the course of a couple of months, I mean, I pretty much burn out.
Yeah.
I was just like, well, that's not a good cycle. I need to stop that. And then kind of like remove the start of that cycle. And then just found all this extra time. You never wake up with a hangover anymore. So like you don't lose a random morning, or you have your weekend like fully. You fully have your fucking weekend from morning till night. It's like, what is this? This is weird.
What is this sorcery?
Yeah, totally. But like, you know, or if you're going to go to a show or a club or whatever, you're going in for a couple of hours and that's great. But you're not like losing yourself for 12 hours and the next couple of days, feeling off kilter. So it's like suddenly I've got all this time coming back. Like like a lot of people, I use that like sober tracking app, and like it tracks money and time. It's like I think I've gained something like I think I worked out it was like 15, 16 days this year in just time.
Yeah,
like sweet.
That's wild, isn't it?
Yeah,
an entire fortnight extra that you like would have lost.
Totally. It's the sesh. And you know, I'd probably rather have that time to do what I want with it than, you know, having lots of interesting kitchen conversations.
Yeah, that's it, man. The 6 a.m. birds tweeting was just like, oh, God.
Yeah, sun coming in.
The Ubers as the sun's coming out. And that was a big thing for me.
The
was
money
like,
I've saved on Ubers.
Mate, I'll do 100%. But also, like, I always pride myself in however much I got deep into it, like still wanting to do the best job I can, right? Because we're all very grateful and humble to do 100%. Something like this for a living. But I would find myself like cancelling that 10 a.m. meeting or trying to move it to later in the day, and then that call slipping, and then... And you don't think it's making a difference because you're still having success and you're still doing good shit. But actually, I was the exact same. It kind of got to the point I was like, I'm not doing as good a job as I think I am here.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I'm obviously doing okay, but like I'm not doing as well as I want to be doing. Or what if I took all of that out? How good could I do then? You know, so it's just like, it just, as I say, the ratio of kind of rewards got so out of whack.
Yeah.
It's like, this shit is not worth that. At all.
So how long are you sober now?
Coming up to 11 months.
Nice.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So years on the horizon.
Years coming up.
Yeah. How does that feel?
It feels great. The way I kind of phrase it to myself is like confident but not complacent.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I approach it. Like I feel good about it. It feels secure, but I'm sure as fuck not taking it for granted.
Yeah. I think complacency is a really...
I'm really scared of complacency.
Yeah, I think it's really good to be aware, because I said to Jamie on a previous episode, like I went to a New Year's Eve party and didn't even think about it, because, you know, I'm approaching 2 years now, and I was like, yeah, it's fine. I'm going for dinner with a load of mates. And then after the dinner, we joined like it was at like a hotel, and it's a black tie thing. And then suddenly loads of other people in the public there, and you forget that actually for New Year's Eve for a lot of people it was a big blowout.
Yeah, totally.
And people are like there and they're kind of up in your face, and like there's lots of, and it completely like sideswiped me, and I was like, oh shit, and I really struggled with it. And I was like, right, that's a real like stark reminder to
One thing I've kind of like I'm quite clear about, which I'm quite grateful for, is like in a situation like that, I probably would just leave.
Yeah.
Like, and no questions asked. And I will say that to my mates. It's like, look, if I suddenly disappear at a certain point, don't take it personally. But there may come a certain point where I'm like, hang on.
Yeah.
Like, I'm out, gone. I'd rather walk out the door, no questions asked, than kind of like see what happens.
I don't want to fucking know. Fuck out of everywhere.
Yeah. It's, and like, and also kind of being that's okay.
100%. You know, I'm all for backdooring it. I think in my particular predicament in that situation was I was with my wife and she was having a great time and there with all our friends. And I was like, oh, but she wants to stay. And
I'd still backdoor it. Yeah.
Like, see you later. Find your way home. Yeah. But complacency. It's great to be aware of it. And I think what you're doing is great in terms of like putting in things that make you accountable. I think it's great whether that's like morning meetings, runs, driving places. It's all like great advice for people that are thinking about this, especially if you're going into environments where traditionally you would be getting.
Yeah. I mean, like I had, it was so important, but like, as I kind of mentioned before, I can't change the environments I'm going to be in. So I have to be completely comfortable or as comfortable as I can be being in these situations and non-judgmental about what anyone else does. Like I've had people doing what they're doing in front of me and offering it to me. And I'm like, no, you do you, you're good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but I have to be okay with that. Because if it's like, you know, that's not a good place for me to be. But it's
You and I are so similar though, because it's like, for me, the booze really wasn't why I needed to quit drinking. It was the gear. And I'm lucky enough that I'd never really got into gear whilst not drinking. So even if people are doing it around me, now I'm just like, all right, cool, they're doing it. I know that, and we've spoken about this a few times, so like probably if I had 3 or 4 beers now and then someone was like, go on. I don't think I would, but like, I don't trust myself.
I wouldn't want to find out. At all.
So I never, and someone asked a question about Tom and I, because we've been talking to a couple of guests that maybe can have a couple of beers now and don't. For me, I'm like, it's a slippery slope.
That's exactly how I see it.
And I've got slippery shoes.
Yeah, it's like, I just don't want to find out. There's no benefit for me in finding out. So if this is a price I've got to pay to make sure that doesn't happen, that feels like quite a small price to me.
Yeah, and we spoke about this earlier as well, like, it's interesting with alcohol because some people genuinely love the taste of it. For me, it was always a function of the buzz or it was taking me somewhere. So I don't see any benefit personally. And again, no qualms of anyone who enjoys a couple of glasses of wine. But for me, I just like it. It got me to a place that I wanted to be in. So the journey I wasn't that bothered about. So for me, I'm just happy to leave it.
Yeah, I mean, like there's element like I kind of. I slightly miss, like, you know, you could have a glass of wine and you just relax a little bit. Like, there's elements of that I do kind of miss. But again, it's just not worth. I'd rather be exactly as I am than kind of open that door. Like, I can't open that door. So it's that door's locked shut.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because that is like, it's the first function of alcohol. It has the same effect as Valium. That's the first effect that it has that it hits you, which is why people always look forward to having a drink.
Yeah.
Because it's that relaxing moment.
Is it? Is that a bit of science you got for me?
Well, it is a bit of science. It's the first, it's the first chemical release. It's the same one.
Dr. Honings.
There you go, mate.
Online PhD.
There you go. But that is the feeling that people have. And that's why it's used as a reward system, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, at the end of whatever it is, they will do that. I don't know if chemically, you know, there is. You know, the placebo I definitely get from the zero still has the same effect for me.
I agree. Yeah. And I think that's why like the zeros have been a real help.
Yeah.
Because it just scratches that itch in that moment. Because I've been to a few like leaving drinks or like, you know, after work drinks with people like around the start of a sobriety. And I was like, let's see how this goes. I'm just going to go. I can backdoor it at any point.
Sure.
But like, I'll have a zero and see how it get on. And it was like, you know, in the moment you might be like, oh, kind of, you know, fucking hell, I could go here. But you've had a zero, so you're still... You haven't had that kind of the fuck it switch hasn't kicked in.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? So the fuck it switch never kicks in.
Yeah.
And like, and I just remember like the first couple of times it was like had 2 or 3 zeros and then left. And like the same thing, like the second I left, I was like, you fucking legend, go on. Like, but that all of that little kind of like, oh, go on.
Yeah.
Before just disappeared the second I left. And then it was just like, you legend, you did. You know, what I wanted to do, the rational me was like, yes. Like the irrational me was like the dude in the pub for a minute.
Yeah, mate, we speak about this so much. Like that getting in your car or getting on the tube, I don't know what it brings up in me, but it's like, you're right, you fucking legend, top geezer, well done.
Yeah.
Like you're not a prick. I love it. I still get this like absolute dopamine release.
Yeah. And the other guy, they're two different people, I think.
Yeah.
But I like fat guy. So it's like, okay, stick with him.
Yeah, stick with him. He'll be on the train home and he'll be getting exactly. up in the morning, like, you know, feeling all right.
Totally.
Making crumpets and hits.
Have you got a camera in my house? Yes. Just crumpets in my house.
Save the hits for High Street Ken.
That is great. And but no, I think like you say, I think your whole journey, you know, sort of reframing how to tackle music industry, dance world, raves, you know, it's commendable. You know, so well done, first of all, for doing it. You know, it's a big milestone, you know, approaching a year. And, you know, I think hopefully from what you're saying, life feels a lot better for it.
100%. And also, like, there's a secondary kind of benefit that I do really like is, you know, I have a privilege of working with lots and lots of wonderful artists, you know, young and old. You know, if I can be that angel on their shoulder or offer an alternative perspective at any point, you know, it's their journey, it'll be their life. But at least I've got that perspective I can maybe offer.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's their choice to take. But much like, you know, you were to me, I can maybe be that to other people. And that feels really, really good.
100%. You know, and I'm sure people, like Jamie said earlier, I think your story and journey will be a flag in the sand for, you know, a lot of people as well that are listening and are thinking, well, if he's doing it, I can do it. I can give it a go.
Is the only reason you've got that? Is the only way you've got me on this thing?
But it's interesting in the music industry though, isn't it? Because I know there's quite a lot of like older people I've worked with over the years, whether it's label presidents or lawyers or senior A&Rs that have been sober because they were in the 90s and it was fucking chaos and like chaos that we can never imagine. And then I think there's our age group in the 30s where like...
Kind of in between.
We're in between, right? So like the younger ones now I think are much more aware of it. They grew up in the social media generation. Everything was online. We were the last ones that were like, we can kind of get away with anything.
Yeah.
But also it was creeping into the point where we probably couldn't. And I think a lot of us, I know I did, I'm sure you probably say the same and judging by you say the same, probably let it go on 5 years too long. I mean, I don't care. The journey was great. I am where I am. And I regret bits, but not too much. But I think we were that generation that fell in the middle. And it seems to be people our age in the industry that are reaching out to us a lot. Because I think they've been like, oh, I kind of just fell into this. And maybe that's who I thought I was.
Also, yeah, totally. And I think, you know, we're the generation or also that age where like people are starting to have kids and, you know, your world kind of changes around you as well. And like, you know, your priorities maybe change or you kind of feel like... can't still be trying to act 21 forever.
Yeah. Sometimes we have to. I mean, this is we're in a job kind of industry, right?
Yeah.
So it's like you've got to go and hang out with that 21-year-old artist and be like, well, I'm senior, Mr. Expertise in music, but also relatable and cool. Like, yeah. It's fucking hard because I'm not cool. Like, I just like music. Do you know what I mean?
You're very right. It's an interesting juxtaposition sometimes. Not that we're being inauthentic, we are being absolutely.
Well, no, but that's what sobriety brings us, the authenticity. Because I think historically, if I'd taken someone out for a bunch of beers and got on the packet, whatever, you're almost like molding, not consciously, but you're just like in that environment. Whereas now I'm like, okay, if this person likes me, they'll like me for genuinely who I am, that we'll want to work together because we genuinely connect. And that is so important.
I think that's a really, really powerful thing is like, win or lose, like whether it's a good interaction or a bad interaction, at least it's an honest interaction.
Yeah, at least it's real.
You know, and I'd rather kind of lose something authentically than win something inauthentically.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
That is quote of the fucking pod.
Yeah.
Rehearse that.
That's going on.
Front cover of Music Week.
I think it's time for the big three.
As always, let's do it, baby.
So for anyone that's thinking of going on a journey of sobriety, what's the single best piece of advice you could give them?
Just again, personally, from my experience, what I found so powerful was, you know, I know we've just missed it, but a dry Jan equivalent, you know, maybe do dry Feb, dry March, whatever. Do a month sober, see how you feel. Mm-hmm. Take it from there. You know, like within 4 weeks, you'll kind of like, you'll have reset and see if that feeling feels better.
Yeah,
like, I found that, I can't tell you how powerful it felt. It was very black and white.
I love that. We actually, I don't know if you saw, I messaged someone literally that yesterday on the podcast because they were like, I did dry Jan. I've had a massive blowout in Feb, like, but I want to go back to it. And I was like, just look at dry Jan as any month of the year.
Yeah.
Just look at 30-day period. And then if you're 30, it can be 60 and you're 60, it can be 90. At that point, like, I think you're on the runway.
Exactly. I think it just starts you on that kind of journey in a really offensive, you know, you're not kind of going, I'm never touching a drop again, which is so huge. It's kind of making it more manageable.
Yeah.
It's like, look, if you can do 30 days, 30 days is nothing. Yeah. You know, and you can still have your zeros, you can still kind of do whatever. But if you can do that, you've just got a comparison point. And I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. What is the single best thing that sobriety has brought you?
Time, patience, happiness. I think I'm a better person for it. I feel like a better person, and that feels really powerful. So I'm very, very grateful for that.
That's great.
I love that. And number three, we would love Andy to write a letter to drunk Andy and start it with, "Dear Andy, what would you tell yourself?"
So you frame that slightly differently to, I think, what you've done before, which is like write a letter from kind of who you are now to...
Yeah.
So I kind of thought about this. I was like, fuck, that's a big one. Do you know what? I wouldn't write a letter to myself, because everything I did makes me everything I am. And I'm very happy with where I've got to. And if I changed any of those experiences, maybe I'd be a different person. So I'm grateful to be who I am in the present. So I probably don't want to dwell on the past.
That's a perspective I fucking love.
Yeah, that's great.
Sorry to send him a blank page and be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, he's like, "Dear Andy." He's like, "He must have died."
Like, shit, I probably better get off the source.
There you go, yeah, that's all you need to do.
Just "Dear Andy, love Andy." Yeah, I love it. No, thanks for coming on, mate. Like I say, you know, it's you know, been great having you, and thanks for sharing all your experiences and, you know, the advice as well. You know, certainly from this, like, you know, music perspective as well. You know, I think it's going to be applicable to everyone that's listening and everyone who enjoys socializing. It's not, you know, just framing into music industry, but it's been nice to have an industry guest on. So thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers, man.
Pleasure.
Mate.
Big thank you to Andy for coming on and being so, like, open.
Yeah, and I feel like I had a Coke buddy. I don't feel like I've had anyone else necessarily on the pod where I've been like, ah, we're the same.
Mate, and I think, you know, I don't think you're alone. You know, I think it's industry-wide, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's something that's so important. You know, I know we've got a lot of people in the music industry that are listening and kind of have, whether that's DJs or people that work, you know, as A&Rs or marketing or whatever, within any industry really. But like, I think there's this notion, especially within music, where, you know, any excuse for a party, any excuse for a celebration, any excuse for, you know, drinks or to get the bags out, etc. And I think, you know, something that really stuck with me with what Andy said, and it's definitely true of myself, was like, 9 times out of 10, I wasn't really that bothered about being in those scenarios. I just was there. And I was using drugs in particular to just like see it through.
Yeah.
And it's so bad, because if you think about, like, I don't know, maybe sometimes you'll have like an, you know, I guess what people use an energy drink for. I was using drugs.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, it's got like this grip on you, like an eagle's talon. And it's just fucking, it's there. It's got you.
Mate, it's difficult. And I think like what becomes difficult and what I always struggle with in music is we talk about like function of alcohol, and you know, you've experienced recently when you were in Australia the sort of camaraderie that you might have had you gone on an absolute bender with you know, said promoter, or you know, because you do to a certain extent forge relationships over the sesh sometimes. And you know, when it comes down, you know, if you're an artist and you've had a night out with, you know, whether that's like an agent, a promoter, something, maybe it gets you the slot above someone else. There is a certain extent that sometimes that's how it works, and which isn't necessarily fair or right, but it's what happens. It's like, you know, who does someone fuck with the most, or who gets given an opportunity? And that's why it's so difficult within music, is like, do you miss out?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think just the expectation, isn't it? Like, if I think to Great Escape, where we're going and doing this talk, like, so many times I've met people in the Queen's Hotel at, like, 2 a.m. when people have been partying, and it's just a thing. Like, think how much, like, the Brits is a good example. You might bump into people at the Brits after party that you haven't seen or spoken to in, like, 3 or 4 years, and you end up actually having, like, a pretty productive 20-minute chat, but you're all fucked.
Yeah.
And I think for me now, it's like getting comfortable enough that I can be in those environments but not feel like I need to be the environment, if that makes sense, and knowing when to leave. So like, for example, when I had that issue in Australia, I'd done the work. I really had done the work. It wasn't like I popped in, watched the show and left. Like I stuck around for 6 hours. Yeah. I was just missing the after bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like finding that balance of like, okay, I'm cool here.
Yeah.
Like I've done it. And also realizing that like ultimately in any career, but I think specifically in music, like you have to do what's best for you, because so often we put everyone else first apart from ourselves. And ultimately, like no one else on the whole usually cares about you that much. Like, so you have to make sure you look after yourself, because everyone else is just on the same fucking mission, the same journey. They've got their like horse blinkers on. They're not doing anything wrong per se, but they don't give a fuck how you're doing. They're just on the journey. Yeah. So like look after yourself. And then I think you can make decisions about what's best for you.
Mate, I could not agree more. And, you know, yeah, it was really, you know, inspiring hearing Andy talk so openly about, you know, his experiences. And, yeah, I know that he's in IMS currently.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that he spoke about last year being probably mentally quite a challenge going out. So I hope he's enjoying Ibiza in a very different light, like this year, maybe like a year on from the last time.
First time. It's interesting because I remember my first download. I spoke about it when I was only like a week sober and I really struggled. And then a year later, pretty much bang on my anniversary, wasn't it? We went to Ibiza.
Yeah.
For your stag. And I felt so calm and settled in it at that point. It just goes to show the difference a year can make. Because I remember saying to my colleague Mark at that download festival just after I'd gone sober, like, I need to go, because otherwise I'm just going to get caught up in this. And would I have drunk? I don't know. I hadn't really made a decision that I was going, quote unquote, fully sober at that point. I think I was like, I'm just going to do a month off.
Yeah.
So it would have been so easy for me to be like, oh, my band's here from out of town and they're all having beers and I want to watch whoever it was, Slipknot, with a couple of pints. Then before I know it, I would have been like booking a hotel, like leaving my car on site, getting a cab. And what's now nearly 2 years probably would have been 3 weeks.
Yeah. Crazy. And
that's the crazy thing, I think, in music, because we're so conditioned to that way of being. Okay, well, this person's here, so I'm going to have a drink. Like, we're going to be doing this, so let's have a drink. I guess it could be said for many walks of life, but I think, like, that's something that's been really eye-opening to me, is, like, saying no, especially in those environments, is so empowering. So don't think about the negative of it. Think about the positive and saying no, like, where that can lead you. Because a no 3 weeks in might lead to a lifetime of better decisions.
Mate, that's it. And yeah, just a big thank you to everyone within the music industry who's been listening and been sharing it about, because, you know, not everyone's vocal about it publicly, but, you know, when I've been in doing label meetings or, you know, just out and about, you know, I keep getting people coming up being like, hey, I really like the pod, man. Like, it's great. A few of us at work listen and this and that. So big shout out. And yeah.
That's been a fascinating thing for me, actually, is like I'll get introduced to someone on email, or like I'll bump into someone in an office and they love the pod. And that's odd, because it might be people that I don't. It's interesting because when it's like people I don't know, they're listening and there's hundreds of thousands of you that aren't from music, I don't think anything of it. But then when someone messages me from like within the music industry, I'm like, oh, I instantly get this like prang.
Yeah.
Because again, like we're so guilty in music of like creating, maybe I shouldn't say music, but this is me speaking from lived experience. I'm sure people that work in car sales might feel the same. But in music, like we're always kind of taught about these like big characters in music, right, over history, and like these cat, you know, be this guy and whatever. So like I think about like the version of Jamie Osmond that I expect they think of me as a manager or a label owner or whatever. It's kind of bullshit. It's like people are listening, just being like, oh, I really like what you're talking about. I should not be like, I shouldn't be so self-deprecating, I guess. Because then in my head, I'm like, oh, are they judging me X, Y, Z? But it's just like, I don't think so. I think we're just having important conversations
100%
that need to be had.
Yeah, exactly. And listen, we're not calling anyone out that is still seshing away and doing business and getting it done, like each to their own. But for the people that are going, fuck, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Or is there another way? I mean, it's just like the fact is that if me and you can do it, Andy can do it, there is another life available within the same industry that allows you to go and arguably be more successful and do more shit and get more done than, you know, going out and getting fucked up.
Yeah, I think there's so many big important points around it in work in particular and sobriety. And that's like
you know, having the honest conversations, having the truthful conversations, having the conversations that need to be had, and the difficult conversations. I think back to when I drank and like a label might have, you know, delivered some bad news I need to deliver to a client. Like if I was hungover, I'd be like, oh, like I can't tell them that yet. And that was just my own anxiety of what they might think. Rather than now, I'll be like, hey guys, can we have a chat? And just have a really like direct conversation. I'll obviously frame it in a way that needs to be framed and I'll make it, you know, nice and I'll, you know, make a plan of action, etc. But I'm not running away. And I think like for the 10 years I worked in music and, you know, drank and was partying, I constantly felt like I was running away from dealing with things I need to deal with. I'd always deal with them at some point.
Yeah.
But maybe just a week or two after I could have dealt with them. And, you know, like I think we spoke about it on a previous episode, like honesty is such an important thing in this game. And it's only been the last like 3 years I feel like I'm like truly honest. Because if something's going shit, like let's just talk about how shit it is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, mate, what a great episode. And again, first of May, Leicester Square.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm so excited. Days. I hope I don't sound too downbeat right now because I'm poorly, but I'm so excited for next week. I just can't believe it's here. Like, it's so crazy.
I know, it's come around quickly.
But Millie's going to be amazing. Rory's going to be amazing. David's going to be amazing. For anyone that's coming, we've got something really special for you guys to take home, which I'm buzzing, a little surprise. Yeah. And yeah, it's going to be a really special night. And then after that, we won't have to talk about it again.
We won't until the next one.
Until we do the next one. Brixton Academy.
Live from the O2.
But yeah, and then also what I want to say is we're probably going to take a break next week because the show's on the 1st.
That's right.
And then the pod would normally come out on the 2nd.
Yeah.
But we've been so flat out, I think we're probably going to have a break and then come back on the 9th.
Yeah.
With a really exciting guest, actually, that we're interviewing Monday coming.
That's right.
Who I've wanted to talk to for ages.
Yeah, very exciting.
Because they tick boxes of like sobriety, sex, relationship.
That's right.
And I think they might be a trained therapist as well.
Yeah.
I think they've got it all.
All of it.
All of the above and more. But yeah, guys, thank you so much for listening. For anyone that's music industry led, as I say, Great Escape, May 18th, 4:30 p.m. downstairs at the Leonardo Hotel.
Yeah.
I believe.
Nice. I don't know.
You've got no fucking clue.
No clue.
Do you?
So yeah, great.
But we're really excited for that. And we're going to be hanging around there. So if anyone music-wise wants to catch up, do let us know. And yeah, thank you so much to Andy for being really honest. Because I know, let's just like, what's the opposite to preface? Because it's the end of the episode. But like, let's just phrase this with like, you were a huge inspiration for him going sober. And I think he felt really safe in and guided by what you were doing. And he's absolutely smashed it. Also wanted to note that this probably was quite uncomfortable for Andy doing it. And I really appreciate him taking the time and being so honest about it, because we kind of threw him into the cauldron
podcasting. Exactly. No, thank you. Big thank you to Andy. So
amazing. Well, guys, we love you. Thank you so much. Remember, you've got this.
You've got this.